just continue on wireless LANs, looking at hidden terminals, but let's say a little bit about the assignment. There's been some questions. So, firstly, about IPERF and the terminology used, if we look at an example, although I only have an example of sending between my computer and receiving at my computer, we see that, so here's the server for IPERF. JPERF is the Java version, some of you would have used that. But it just gives you the different boxes to select different options. So here we see a server waiting to receive, or initially was waiting to receive. When we start the client with UDP, you need to specify how fast you want to send. And in IPERF, I didn't do it. In this case, we use the minus B option. Minus B refers to bandwidth. But from the client's perspective, that's the sending rate. Minus B, 2 meg, meaning send at 2 megabits per second. So what happens when the client starts? It starts generating packets with just random data and sends them at an interval such that we generate 2 megabits per second. It's sending those packets now to the server, 2 million bits per second. The packet size, I think, is reported somewhere on each packet has 1,470 bytes. So you could calculate how many packets per second, but overall, enough packets per second to generate 2 million bits per second were sent. Then when it's finished the test, this is the server, and just look at these two lines with the test or ID 4, what's happened is that the server has received packets. Now the server doesn't always receive exactly what was sent. Because if we try to send at 1 million megabits per second over our link, we're not going to receive that because our link has some capacity. So in this case we did send at 2 megabits per second and we received at 2 megabits per second. And the report at the server indicates the receiving rate. That's in effect our throughput, 2 megabits per second. It's also reported under the server report at the client. So the client prints out two things. It prints out the speed at which it's sent here, but look and differentiate between what's printed here and this server report. So there's two things. There's a client sending, the server receiving. We care about how fast the server receives. That's the throughput, which is reported here. This is the total amount transferred, but that was over a period of 10 seconds. So we could do the calculation, but IPERF does it for us and tells us the receiving rate is 2 megabits per second. Zero packets lost. And that should be the same. This line is exactly the same as printed here. You can write down or record either of them because they're the same. Except this line may be different. You may get results where you send at 10 megabits per second but only receive at 7 megabits per second. This is the one we want, which is in effect throughput. IPERF, JPERF refer to them as bandwidth, but the receiving rate we can think of as throughput in terms of how we've described the assignment. What else? The wireless LAN tests, you've got your access point, you connect your PC, or let's say this is your access point here, and you have a laptop. We're using wireless LAN to send to the access point, but then connect the access point via the Ethernet cable to some other computer. It doesn't have to be a laptop. In fact, none of these computers have to be laptops. If you've got a PC with a wireless LAN PCI card, you can use that. And my suggestion is to run the server, the client here, and the server here. But in fact, I think if you do it the other way, it will still work. You'll still get the same results. And what we're really testing, because this is 100 megabit per second Ethernet, we expect the wireless LAN to be slower than this. We expect the wireless LAN to not give us more than 54 megabits per second. If this was just 1 megabit per second, this would not be a good test setup, because this would be the limitation. But since it's 100 megabit per second Ethernet, if we send fast, or if we send with a UDP sending rate of 10 megabits per second, I would expect to be able to receive at the server at 10 megabits per second. If I send from my laptop here at a sending rate of 100 megabits per second, I don't expect to be able to receive at 100 megabits per second at the server, because our wireless LAN will not support 100 megabits per second. What will it support is what you're trying to find. And that's the main objective of that task. Find out what is the maximum throughput that the wireless LAN link can support. So if you send at 100, you'll get some value. If you send at 10, you may get 10. So this value should be greater than 10, just using example numbers. So one way to do that is to start at low numbers and gradually increase until you start to get to a point where the sending rate, or the receiving rate, is less than the sending rate. Another way to detect when you're reaching this point is you'll start to see packets lost. If we send at 10 megabits per second and receive at 10 megabits per second, there are no packets lost. But if I try to send at 100 megabits per second, if my wireless LAN link only supports 20 megabits per second throughput, and I have because we're sending much more than what's received. So we're trying to discover this number under different conditions. One of the conditions you could try, if possible, is to use two clients. Find out what it is and then see what happens when you introduce laptop 2, sending at the same time to the same server. Okay, so this is what we're trying to discover, the maximum throughput that we achieve with wireless LAN. I may answer any other questions about the assignment in the afternoon session as well. Any comments on this, these two parts, IPERF or the wireless LAN network topology? Who put your hand up if you're using JPERF, the Java-based performance tester? Has anyone tried it? JPERF? No? Has anyone tried IPERF? 1, 2, okay, everyone's using IPERF. Okay, that's fine. Just that with JPERF, there's some different terminology used. So sometimes what I show here will look different in JPERF. It does the same thing, except the terminology, the user interface differs a bit. Well, uses different terminology. Okay, if there's other questions, then ask me at the end of the lecture during the break and I'll address them in the afternoon session. Today we want to continue on and try to finish on wireless LAN. So this morning we'll explain a little bit more about hidden stations and RTS-CTS, and we'll give you some example questions to solve today, this morning and this afternoon. Where we got to, last week we covered in some depth and with an example what's called the basic access mode, of DCF. That is this mechanism of, okay, we must wait for the medium to become or to be idle for a certain period of time, and that period of time is the diffs, the back off period, which varies. Then if the medium was idle for that period, we transmit our data frame, short interframe space, and then the ACK. There are some problems with that. And in this specific scenario, where we have what's called hidden stations or hidden terminals, where we have some receiver in the middle, like an access point, and two clients wanting to transmit, but they cannot hear each other. That is, the clients are outside of their range of each other. So, whatever client A transmits, client B cannot receive or does not know that client A is transmitting. That's what I mean when I say they cannot hear each other. It's transmitting, the signal is strong here, it's strong enough for the access point to receive, that is, they're within range, but it's for the client B to determine that client A has actually transmitted something. It's as if the signal is so weak that nothing is received. That's the concept here. And similar in the other direction. As a result, we've got a high chance of collisions. Because even if they want to transmit at different times, client A, and then a little bit later client B wants to transmit, they start their normal procedure, okay, no one else is transmitting for diffs, no one else is transmitting for a back-off period, they may choose different back-off periods. A starts transmitting, because no one was transmitting, sending to the access point. Sometime later, while A is transmitting, B, which cannot detect that, starts its own transmission, starts sending data, both to the access point. From the perspective of the access point, this is a collision. Two transmissions at once, it cannot understand either of them. So, if the access point cannot understand either of those transmissions, there will be no acknowledgement. If there's no ACK, then the senders will time out, waiting for an ACK, and then we'll have to try again, retransmit, which is do the diffs, do a back off, potentially a larger back off, because we increase the contention window on a retransmission, send the data again, and same with client B. And if they're unlucky, they will collide again, and we'll have to repeat again. So this is a problem, because that can greatly reduce the throughput, these collisions, because we have to retransmit many times, take a large amount of time to transmit our data. It becomes significant, or when does a collision occur? It occurs when they both start at some time such that the two data frames overlap in time. And we tried to illustrate that. When does a client want to send data? Well, it depends upon what the user is doing in that computer. That is, when they're pressing buttons, clicking on links, and so on. Let's assume that's random, that is, at some interval, random interval, that the client wants to send data. We cannot predict when they want to send data. But the point is that if the data frames that they're sending is large, then there's a larger chance that there's a collision. Because a collision occurs when two data frames transmitted overlap in time. So if this is data frame one, if the second one is transmitted, actually, give us some more space. If this is one data frame, then, and we assume the data frames are the same length, if the second one is transmitted at this time such that they just overlap here, just at the end, that's a collision. Because even though most of the data frame did not overlap, from the access point's perspective, when it receives, starts receiving signals from two sources, it cannot determine what either of those sources were sending, and as a result cannot determine what the entire data frame was. And we assume that's a collision, and that the access point cannot understand either frame. So any portion of overlap is bad. In real life it may not be so bad, but in the assumptions that we've made in this scenario is that if two frames overlap, they collide. So if the second frame starts at this time, there'll be a collision. Of course, if the second frame started here, there'll be a collision. If the second frame starts at this time, the exact same time, there'll be a collision. If it starts at this time, there'll be a collision. If it starts a little later, just after this data frame was received, there's no collision. That is, if they don't overlap, there's no collision. So if this is one frame and the second frame starts any time between here and here, there'll be a collision, which is approximately two times the time to transmit the data, or is two times the time to transmit the data. If this took 1,000 time units and the other data frame took 1,000 time units, then if the second transfer starts within this period of 2,000 time units, then there will be a collision. The point is, if we have smaller data frames, the chance of a second frame starting such that it causes a collision is much less. So here, let's put numbers. So the time to transmit data, let's say, is 1,000 time units, 1,000 microseconds. Then if let's say, client B starts to transmit any time within the period of 2,000 microseconds, two times the length of the data frame, then there'll be a collision. So if it starts, this was time 4,000, and this was time 2,000. If client B starts anywhere between 2,000 and 4,000, collision occurs. That is, any time within a period of 2,000 microseconds. If we have smaller frames, let's say this is 10, and the other frame is also 10, then using the same concept, if we start 10 units before this one, let's put times to these again. T equals 3,000. T equals 3,010. T equals 2,090. Same concept. If client B starts to transmit the data frame between time 2090, or up until 3010, a collision will occur. That is, the two frames will overlap. So, in this case, with smaller frames, if client B transmits anywhere within a period of 20 microseconds, a collision occurs. So, in case one, if the client transmits in this period of 2,000 microseconds, we get one collision. In case two, with smaller frames, if client B transmits in a period of just 20 microseconds, a collision will occur. Now, we don't know when the client will transmit, but it's more likely that a collision will occur in this case. That is, if clients are transmitting at random, the chance that a second client transmits in a period of 2,000 microseconds is much higher than the chance that the second client will transmit in a short period of 20 microseconds. In other words, look at any 20 microseconds of time and check whether client B transmits or has one transmission. The chance of that being true is much less than the chance that client B has a transmission in a larger period of 2,000 microseconds. As a result, the chance of a collision with smaller frames is lower than a chance of collision with larger frames. If we have large data frames, especially with hidden terminals, we have a higher chance of collision than using smaller data frames. That's trying to explain the concept of the impact of different size of data frames on collisions. Normally we like large data frames because it minimizes the overhead. Remember, the overhead we have diffs back off a header, sifts some data, and ACK. If we have a very large data frame, then that overhead is small relative to the real data. If I have a very short data frame, that overhead is large relative to the data. So normally we want large data frames. But in the case of terminals here, if we use larger data frames, we've got a larger chance of collision. So there's a trade-off that needs to be considered. And the trade-off in wireless LAN is to introduce this second alternative mode of operation called RTS-CTS. This is talking about basic access. The idea, if you have frames above some size, if the frames are too large, such that the chance of collision is high, then instead of using this mode of operation, use the alternative called RTS-CTS. I'll try and go through and explain how RTS-CTS works. We'll come back to that slide to explain. So, actually, the DCF mechanism has actually two modes of operation, basic access and RTS-CTS. Basic access just has data frames and ACK frames. RTS-CTS has additional two frames, an RTS frame, a CTS, as well as the original data and ACK. RTS means request to send. The idea is if I want to send a data frame, I first ask the recipient, am I allowed to send? I request to send. If the recipient thinks it's okay for me to transmit such that a collision will not occur, they'll respond with a clear to send. You are clear to send. And then I'll send the data frame. So there are two different frames. They are small, about 20 bytes or 14 bytes. Normally a data frame will be hundreds, if not 1,000 bytes. Again, a larger data frame can be cause less overheads. So the mechanism that describes it, we'll describe it through an example. The mechanism, in this example we're going to show that there are three clients, all within range of an access point. So everyone could communicate to the access point, except all outside of each other's range. A cannot hear B, B cannot hear C, and C cannot hear A, and vice versa. So when A transmits, neither B nor C know that A is transmitting. So here's how RTS-CTS operates. In this example, A has some data to send to the access point. We all want to send to the access point. It follows the normal procedure of a diffs. That is, the medium must be idle for this period of diffs. If it's not, again, same as the previous procedure, we'd have to defer and wait until it becomes idle. Choose a random back-off, no different from before. Once the back-off is completed, if no one was transmitting, then instead of sending data, we send this short RTS frame, request to send. We send it to the access point saying, I want to send data, am I allowed to? Access point receives the RTS, waits a short interframe space, and if everything is okay, that is, if the access point is not aware of anyone else wanting to send, then it sends back a clear to send message. Request to send, you are clear to send. Clear to send your data. That clear to send is received, and when the clear to send is received, the original source, A, waits a short interframe space and transmits the data immediately. No back off, no checking if the medium is idle, transmit. SIFS, ACK. So if everything's okay, we see that it's a variation on the previous basic access mode in that DIFS, back off, RTS, CTS, data, ACK. Previous we had DIFS, back off, data, ACK. We've introduced these two new frames. How does it help us? Well, let's look at what happens to other nodes, B and C. B and C cannot hear computer A. Anything that computer A transmits will not be received or heard by B or C. Of course, the access point will. So, when A transmits the RTS, B and C do not know that anyone else is transmitting, and that's because of the hidden stations. They are hidden from each other. But when the access point responds with a clear to send, both B and C do receive that clear to send, because from the previous slide they are within range. A sent an RTS. B and C do not receive that because they're outside of the range. Access point responds with a clear to send. Remember, in wireless, it's a broadcast medium. When we transmit from access point to client A, it's in fact transmitted all around. It's a wireless transmission. Therefore, it's sent from A access point to A. B and C, which are within range of the access point, receive that clear to send. So here, the RTS is not received by B or C. The CTS is heard by B or C, B and C. The meaning of that, the clear to send when heard by B and C, is that both B and C realize someone else is about to send. Since they know someone else is about to send, they immediately defer. That is, they do not try to send. They defer from accessing the medium. And inside both the RTS and CTS is a field in the header that indicates how long they should defer. You can think of it saying, the RTS includes a field saying, if you receive this, be aware that someone else is about to transmit for the next 1,400 microseconds. Similar with CTS, it includes a field which indicates to B and C, someone else is about to transmit for the next period of time. Do not try to transmit. So they will in fact defer, not try to transmit, not try a DIFS or a back off. And when that period of time is completed, which should be enough for the data and the ACK, both B and C will start their attempts to transmit if they have data to send. by using a divs, a backoff. If one of them chooses a smaller backoff than the other, then they'll get to transmit the RTS first. RTS, DTS. C does not hear the RTS. Again, B and C are outside of each other's range. C does not hear the RTS, but does hear the CTS. And therefore, at this point, C knows, someone else is transmitting. I will not attempt to transmit. I will defer until they're finished. And then I'll try. This off RTS DTS data app. So this RTS DTS mechanism can minimize or reduce the chance of collisions occurring due to hidden terminals. Let's go back and look at some of the details. If you go back to one of the slides on the structure of the frames, there's a field called the NAV, Network Allocation Vector. Or the field name is called Duration, but it carries what's called a Network Allocation Vector. Both the RTS and CTS frames have this special field. So, inside this field is some value that indicates how long the data transmission is going to take. So that the person or the client that receives an RTS or CTS knows how long someone else is going to transmit. Let's do a calculation of that. Using the same numbers that we used in the last example. Actually, this example, but to do it with some numbers and do it on the board. So, last week we had an example where we had a payload of 1,341 bytes. We used the same data.
So the transmission time for a data frame from last week we calculated with 1,341 bytes. Is 1,000 microseconds. That's just the data size divided by the data rate. With the other frames, we said last week that the ACK was 1,000 microseconds, 100 microseconds. And we'll do the same, just to make my calculations easier, and say the ACK, the RTS, and the CTS all take have a transmission time of 100 microseconds. In fact, they are different sizes, so this is not true. That is, I think this one, ACK may be 110, RTS may be 160. But just to keep it simple in the calculation, I'll say that they're all the same size, small frames, transmitted at a rate such that the transmission time is 100 microseconds. So, at this point in time, at the start, data is ready to transmit from computer A, and we'll follow the normal procedure, dips and back off. You can draw it on this slide. I'm just going to end up with the same diagram here, but with numbers on it. Dips takes 50 microseconds. Back off, we assume computer A chose the random number. In this case, it chose 5. I have the answer. So if we choose a back off of 5 slots, each slot is 20 microseconds, so that is 100 microseconds. So start at time 0, diffs finishes after 50, back off will finish after 150. Because the back off is 5 slots or 100 microseconds. We transmit, since no one else was transmitting, we transmit the RTS, which also takes 100 microseconds. That'll bring us up to time 250. Neither B or C will receive that, so they don't know anything's happening. Access point does receive it. When it receives that frame, it realizes, okay, computer A wants to send data to me. I'll respond with a clear to send saying you are allowed to send your data. And the time, it waits a short time to switch from its receiving mode to its transmitting mode. That is, was receiving, and now it needs to transmit. So the short interframe space is the time, the SIFS, is the time between after you receive the frame, a short time to wait until you transmit the next frame. Which is, what's the value in our case? The value we've assumed of the short interframe space is 10 microseconds. So we'll start at 250, 260, CTS takes another 100, which will bring us up to 360. Let's assume at time, so in the meantime, computer B had data to send at time 270, somewhere around here. 270 is the time when B wants to send data. So what it does is follows the normal procedure. Check if anyone else is transmitting. Sense the medium. Check whether the medium is idle or busy. If we see what access point was doing, at time 250, nothing. At time 260, the access point started to transmit the CTS. The red indicates the time at which the medium is busy from that node's perspective. Then access point starts transmitting the CTS between 260 and 360. Therefore, from computer B's perspective, also computer C, during that same period, the medium is busy. Someone's transmitting. If computer B, the user clicked on a link, wanted to send data at time 270, computer B will realize someone's transmitting, we have to wait. Wait until the medium becomes idle again. But this is where RTS has an extra mechanism. Inside this CTS frame is the duration field, which indicates how long this upcoming data transfer is going to take. So when computer B receives this CTS at time 360, they will know how long they have to defer. Let's calculate how long it's going to be. When A sent an RTS frame, it included in there a value that indicates how long the data would take. And that's reasonably easy to calculate. It's called the duration field. Duration field inside the RTS frame. When you send that frame, you set the value to indicate how long you're going to take. And computer A knows, okay, the time from when the RTS is finished until the ACK is finished should be a duration of the short interframe space plus the time to get a CTS back, plus, that is, this short interframe space, plus this time, the CTS, plus this short interframe space, plus the time to transmit the data, plus the time to get the ACK back. So before all this happens, that is, when computer A sends the RTS, it includes inside that frame a field indicating this time, this total time, which in our example is 10, plus the CTS, 100, plus a short interframe space of 10, plus data. We know how large our data is. Computer A knows how large the data it wants to send and how long it will take, which is 1,000 in our example, plus a short interframe space of 10, plus an ACK of 100, which is 1,230 microseconds. So inside this RTS frame is a value that indicates the upcoming transmission of data is going to take 1,200 microseconds from when the RTS completes. Similar in the CTS, inside the clear to send frame, the duration field, is set by the access point. So the access point just received a request to send. It indicates the upcoming transmission will take 1,230 microseconds. The access point responds with a clear to send, and it indicates that the upcoming data transfer is going to take how long. What's the duration field indicate in the CTS frame? Quickly calculate it. How long's left? The RTS duration field says from the end of the RTS until the ACK is going to take 1,230. Access point receives that RTS and then sends back shortly later a CTS, and it sets the duration field to what value? No, it's going to be less than this. That is, What time remaining until the ACK is finished? RTS duration field indicated the time from here to here. This is telling anyone who receives the RTS that a transmission is about to take place. Do not try to send for this period of time. That's the idea of this field, to say, tell everyone who receives it, someone else is about to send, you should not try to send. Similar with that CTS, it says the same thing. Anyone who receives the CTS will see the duration field and realise, someone else is about to send for this period of time, I will not try to send. What's the value of the duration? 1,120. Microseconds. Why? Well, the time, if it's going to take 1,230 from here until here, then the access point knows, okay, from this point, I've just done a short interframe space, which is 10, so it's going to take another 1,220, but I've just transmitted the CTS, if we count from after the CTS, which takes 100, then from here to here will be 1,120. That is this minus the time for the SIFS and the CTS, minus 110. So, inside this clear to send frame is this value. Anyone who receives the clear to send knows. From that point, and for another 1,120 microseconds, someone else is about to send, and I will not try to send. And that's what happens here. Coming back, A sent request to send, including that value of 1,230. Access point received. B or C did not receive. They're too far away. Access point responds with a clear to send with a duration of 1,120. B and C do receive this, as does A. A receives the clear to send because everyone is within range of the access point. When B receives it, it realises, okay, someone's about to send for the upcoming period of time. From here, which is 360, when the clear to send finished, for a next 1,120 microseconds. So from 360 up until 360 plus 1,120 brings us to 1,480. In other words, at this point in time, computer B says, I will not try to do anything until time 1,480. I will not try to check if the medium is busy or idle. I'll just assume someone else is transmitting. Same with C, because C heard the CTS at the same time and is going to wait until time 1,480. Computer A will receive the CTS, meaning it's allowed to send. I've sent a request to send. I receive a response saying you are clear to send. Now waits a short interframe space. Sends the data. And short interframe space and an ACK comes back. And quickly calculating the times, this was 360 plus a short interframe space, 370 plus 1,000, 1,370 plus another short interframe space is 1,380 plus the ACK, which is another 100, brings us to time 1,480, which is of course what we've got here, 1,480. Almost lined up. this RTS and CTS inform the other hidden stations that a transfer is about to take place. A completed its transfer, and now they have the opportunity to try and send using the normal procedure. If we didn't have RTS CTS, then we could have had a collision. Yes, CTS, computer B would not know a transfer was taking place. If we didn't have RTS, CTS, we would have started transmitting data at 270. B would have done its diffs, its back off. It would not know that A was transmitting because it's too far away, and then would have started transmitting its data. They may have collided, depending on the exact timing. And that would be bad. This avoids the collision. And then we just continue from B and C. They follow their normal procedure. Wait for the diffs. Since they both start at the same time, they'll both finish at the same time. Back off. And of course it depends upon what random numbers they choose. The one that chooses, in this case, the client that chooses the lowest random number will get to transmit. The other one will have to wait. That is, they win access. This is a competition to see who gets to transmit first. The winner is the one that chooses the lowest random number in the back-off slots. In my example, I will say that, okay, computer B chooses the random number 4 and computer C 12. Therefore, computer B gets to transmit because diffs of 50, a back off of 4 slots, which is 80. This one has to wait for 12 slots, which is 240. This one will complete its back off, transmit the RTS, we'll have a CTS, clear to send, and then we'll have some data. Let's look at the numbers here. We were at time 1480. Diffs will bring us to 1530. Back off of 4 slots. 4 times 20 is 80, so 1530 plus 80, 1610 here. RTS is transmitted, takes another 100, plus a short interframe space here, bring us to time. The CTS is started to be transmitted at time 1610 plus 100 plus 10, which is 1720. So at time 1720, access point starts sending the clear to send. Similar, both the RTS and CTS would have a duration field calculated, the same as in these two. It may be a different value. In our example, it would be the same value because the data size is the same. But in general, it may be the data frames may be different sizes. Note, computer C does not receive the RTS. B sent an RTS, so there was someone transmitting at this time, only the access point receives. A, computer A and computer C are too far away. So computer B is still counting its back off here. It's counting down. It had to wait for 120 slots. What happens? 240. But when would the computer C finish the back off? Well, if we start at 1530 and we have to go for 240, then it would finish at 1770. Back off of 12 slots is 240 microseconds, 1530. It should finish somewhere around here, which would be 1770. Does it finish? Let's look in more detail. It's backing off. That is, no one's transmitting. No one's transmitting. It doesn't know anyone's transmitting. That is, it cannot hear the RTS, so it still thinks no one's transmitting. No one's transmitting. At time 1720, someone starts transmitting. That is, access point starts sending the clear to send. As soon as that starts, computer C must stop or suspend its back off period. It didn't finish. It would have finished at time 1770, but unfortunately someone started transmitting before it finished, precisely at time 1720, and therefore it suspends the back off, receives the clear to send, and from that will know, because the clear to send has the duration field, it will know, okay, I have to wait until time, and in this case it will be time, what, 1720, 1820, 940. That is, the CTS will have a duration field indicating the same value we calculated over there, 1120. That is, when the CTS is finished, you'll have to wait another 1120 microseconds. So from 1720, it finishes at 1820, plus 1120 brings us to 2940. So C knows it has to wait. We call this deferral. We're deferring access. Sometimes you'll see refers to the NAV, the network allocation vector, which is just the name in the standard to mean this period of time that we must wait. But essentially we must wait. The data will be transmitted by computer B, and an ACK will come back. And 1720, 1820, 1830, 2830, 2840, 2940. The ACK will finish being transmitted at time 2940, which is exactly the time when computer C should, or expects the transmission to complete. So the final thing we've got to do is computer C to complete its transmission. And remember, if we suspend the back-off, so if the back-off period is interrupted, we will continue counting down from where we left off. Let's work that out. We started at 1530. We were interrupted at time 1720. So we completed how many slots? How many slots did we count down? We had to count down in the back off 12 slots, 12 times 20. Think that we're counting down, 12, 11, 10. We interrupted at time 1720. So in fact we got, what, 190 microseconds, which is 9 slots counted down. That is, 9 slots is 180. We didn't get the 10th slot completed. So we think counting down here. Start at 1530. We've got 12 to go. We've got 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. How many do we have left? Did I get it right? A little bit more space. 3. We've got 3 slots remaining. And then we're interrupted. So not to scale here, but the point is that we count down 20 microseconds at a time. 20 microseconds is the time for each slot. And we counted down 190 microseconds. We were supposed to finish 240. So in effect, we've got three full slots to go. 50 microseconds, but we count in terms of slots. So we only counted down 9, 3 remaining. As a result, here, diffs, back off for 3 slots. RTS, CTS, data ACK. And then we've finished our data transfer, and that brings us to this point. So, some differences between the basic access and RTS-CTS. The RTS and CTS, before the data transfer, tell other nodes that someone's about to transmit. Especially tells hidden stations that someone's about to transmit. Because B and C are hidden from A, but they are not hidden from the access point. And therefore they hear the CTS. It informs them that someone's about to transmit. And that's the goal here. So that they do not transmit and cause a collision. Of course, the RTS and CTS introduce some extra small overhead. That's the disadvantage here. Can we have a collision? How can we have a... Well, first, can we still have a collision using RTS-CTS? Yes or no? Hands up. Wake up and hands up for yes. Can we have a collision using RTS-CTS? All right, we saw with basic access, the original scheme, we could have a collision. An example, two nodes chose the same back-off period. Remember from last week, if two nodes chose the same back-off period, the same random number, we would get a collision. Same happens here. If both nodes chose back-off interval of 4, there will be a collision. Because they will both transmit the RTS, there will be no CTS coming back. So we can still have a collision. But in this case, it's not a collision of the data, it's a collision of the RTS frames. Small frames collide, which is not so bad as large frames colliding, because we don't waste as much time. So yes, we can still have collisions in RTS-CTS, same as basic access. In addition, we could still have a collision here. Ignoring the end of the back-offs, what could have happened, A started to transmit after time 150, the RTS. It could have happened that B started to transmit an RTS at, say, time 160. If B started a diffs at, say, time 20, and then it did a back-off, it could have been a case where the RTS of A and B collided. And we cannot avoid that. But the chance of that happening is much less than the chance of two data frames colliding. We've rubbed it off here, but the original thing that we went through, we said that the chance of two large frames colliding, if we have two large data frames, is much larger than the chance of two small frames colliding. RTS and CTS as well. RTS is a small frame. Data is normally a large frame. RTS is normally 10 or up to 30 bytes. Data is typically 100 bytes up to 1,500 bytes. The larger the better. So yes, we can still have collisions of RTS, but the chance of a collision is much less than using a large frame. So that's another advantage using an RTS-CTS scheme.
let's see what we've missed. Or summarize on basic access and RTS CTS. So in fact, we now have two modes of operation, or two modes in 802.11 data transfer. Either basic access, using just data and ACK, or RTS-CTS, using these additional two frames. And in practice, the trade-off is that basic access is normally, if you have smaller data frames, RTS-CTS is normally good if you have larger data frames. All right, what's the exact trade-off? That depends upon different conditions. So in fact, wireless LAN devices, and in the standard, there's a parameter called the RTS threshold. And how it works is that if a computer has a data frame which is larger than the threshold, the RTS-CTS mechanism will be used. If it's less than the threshold, then the original basic access will be used. So this is applied on every single frame that we want to send. If our threshold was... So it's a parameter in your wireless LAN device. If it had the value... of 750 bytes, then in our example, remember our data was 1,341 bytes, in the example we would use RTS-CTS for each data frame, because each data frame is greater than the threshold. But if sometime later I had a data frame which was only 200 bytes, so computer C had a data frame of just 200 bytes to send, because it's less than the threshold, then for that individual data frame, basic access will be used. So a computer switches between the two modes depending upon the size of the frame. It's not using one or the other all the time. It depends on the size of the frame to transmit. And the size of the frame, again, depends upon the user. What is the user doing? Are they just trying to send a small request to a web server, therefore there's a small 200-byte frame to send? Or are they transferring a large file and therefore we're using very large data frames to be efficient? So again, it's difficult to predict what the size of the data frame will be. Therefore, we just set the threshold such that we switch between RTS and basic access. RTS-CTS is good for solving hidden terminal problems. If you have nodes which are too far away from each other to hear, but close enough to the access point. And in general, for avoiding collisions. But the problem with RTS-CTS is it introduces extra overhead. We have extra overhead of sending these two other frames. That's a waste of our time. If we have small data frames, this extra overhead can be significant. If my data frame is just 50 bytes, but I have to spend a lot of time sending RTS, CTS, and then a small amount of time sending data, that can be very inefficient. So the idea is that when we have large data frames, the overhead of RTS, CTS will be less significant and therefore acceptable. And that's why we generally use some threshold to determine when to use basic access or RTS, CTS. There are other factors that determine what's the best value. It's not easy to say, okay, the best value for RTS threshold is 750. There are many factors that determine what is the best value. Depends upon the number of nodes in your network. Again, it's hard to predict what that will be. It would change over time. And how fast they're sending. Are these nodes transferring a lot of data or just every 5 minutes sending data? So, determining the best value for RTS threshold is not easy. And that finishes the details of the two mechanisms for data transfer in 802.11. Just quickly recapping, in 802.11 data transfer, the mechanism we use is called DCF, Distributed Coordination Function.
It's to make sure that we can transfer data in an efficient manner and fair amongst the different users. And we've seen the two modes, basic access used for smaller data frames and RTS-CTS used for larger data frames. This afternoon what we'll do is we'll give you some two examples to calculate from last year's exam, so you'll have some small tasks to solve. And then we'll finish on some smaller aspects about summarizing the performance of 802.11, looking at some parameter values, and finishing on some different design issues with wireless LANs. So we'll cover that and finish that in the last session for the day, that is in the normal lecture time. And I will answer any questions about your assignment if you have some. So if you have questions about the assignment, come and see me now. And if needed, I'll give some extra comments on that in the afternoon. So that's enough for today.